We just heard from Wayne Pacelli in the last hour talking about them being a vanishing breed. And 90% or more of family farms have disappeared in the last decade or so. That includes small dairies and family-owned egg production facilities, things of that sort. They're disappearing, being replaced by these gigantic agricultural conglomerates, factory farms. It's the only way you can describe them. Two men who have been on the forefront of the fight against the incursion of factory farms will be joining me in just a moment. Matt Dominguez has a law degree and joined the family of the Farm Animal Protection Campaign as a public policy manager and worked as a legislative lobbyist as well for laws to get this stuff under control. And we'll be joined also by Cody Carlson, who's been an undercover investigator in some of the biggest investigations undertaken by the Humane Society and Mercy for Animals. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, our conversation about factory farms and its implications for you and your family continues. We're joined now by Cody Carlson and Matt Dominguez. Fellas, good to have you on the program.
George, thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Matt, I'm going to start with you. People don't usually go to law school and have it in mind that they're going to go to work to protect animals. How did it end up for you that that is the focus of your work?
Yeah, so I actually originally went to law school for the environmental law sector. I went to Lewis and Clark, which has an incredible environmental law program there. But quickly, during my first year of law school, I went to a Student Animal Legal Defense Fund meeting, and I learned about the plight of animals, in particular of farm animals. I just had no idea, which was ironic for me, given the fact that I was actually raised on a cattle ranch in California, where I spent most of my childhood tending to cattle, and I had no idea that in the United States, agriculture didn't represent my family's farm. It actually was represented by large industrial farms. And so I quickly learned that these animals need our help. And I realized that with my law degree that and also the skills that I would gain in law school, that I could protect these animals. And so quickly after graduating, I was honored enough to and lucky enough to join the Humane Society to start fighting back against animal agriculture.
Cody, your story. How did you become an investigator for the Humane Society?
I suppose the short answer was I was working at the time as a junior private investigator for basically a firm that worked for large corporations, and I was one of the people heading up our pro bono department. So I was reaching out to groups like the Humane Society and Mercy for Animals, as well as other organizations trying to do some work for them. And Nathan, the president of Mercy for Animals, ended up writing me back and saying, well, we really appreciate the offer, but what we really need is people out in the field. How would you like to come work for us? And I guess he reached me at the right time in the right place. I was curious to see what the job would entail, so I just sort of went for it. Thinking at first it would just be for one job or two jobs, maybe take 6 months of my life. And I ended up just being really so affected by what I saw at those places that I stayed on for a couple of years. I ended up working at a variety of farms over 2 years.
How many did you do?
Moving on to the next thing. I worked at at four factory farms and investigated a number of puppies as well.
Well, let's give us the front row seat to this. Why don't you tell us about the first one? What kind of training you went through before you got the job, and then what you found when you started working?
Sure. Well, so I went through a 2-week training process to get ready for this job, and it involves everything from learning how to operate the hidden camera technology to just knowing how to work your way in these situations. And then I just kind of hit the road and looked out for want ads and ended up landing a job at the biggest dairy farm in the Northeast. I worked there for about 5 weeks as a mechanic, basically repairing the milking machines and these large technologies they use to kind of deal with all the manure that comes through. And it was really shocking. Just to see, when you drive around in the Northeast, you tend to see a couple cows out in the field, and you get a sort of pastoral idea of what farming is like in the region. Probably not too dissimilar from what Matthew had at his farm. But then when you get to go behind the doors of these really big facilities where so much of our animal products are being made at, it's really a different image than what you see from the side of the road. You get behind these barns, and you see these cows that, they never go outside. They're tightly crowded in these tiny, filthy concrete sheds. they're, you know, over impregnated, they're pumped full of growth hormones and things like that. And it's just it's really just a cruel existence where they're overdriven, where they really have no opportunities to express their natural behaviors, where they're neglected when they're injured. So we ended up preparing a criminal complaint, and one of my coworkers was convicted of animal cruelty. And so based off that, we also got a bill proposed in the state legislature that would have reformed some of these practices. And we got companies associated with this facility to sever their ties.
What was the coworker doing? What was the coworker doing? What things had he done?
He was basically sort of just taking out his day-to-day frustrations on the animals. So, you know, cows are very very friendly. They're very curious. And we'd work right there in the middle of them, you know, repairing equipment. So they'd kind of come up and, you know, watch us and check out what they're doing. And occasionally he'd get frustrated and just grab a wrench and turn and hit the nearest one. And so just being able to get that on film was enough to be able to get him convicted and barred from working from animals for another number of years.
What about in terms of cleanliness of the final product? Would you consume product that came from the place where you were working?
Yeah, you know, I think the obvious answer is no. It's a really profound situation to be in, and not just in terms of what you see, but in terms of what you smell, what you hear. It really affects you in a total sensory way. And so, you know, you smell, I smell milk now, and it brings me back to these farms. It's not a sanitary situation by any stretch.
I want to come back to you, Cody, and hear some more stories about other places that you work at. I want to bring Matt back into the conversation. Matt, the kind of work that Cody did, these ag gag laws would presumably outlaw that stuff. Can they, your opinion, can they withstand constitutional muster if and when something like that goes to federal court?
You bring up a great point, and it's not just that they try to stop investigations like the ones Cody have been doing, but they're actually trying to criminalize and think about it from the context of you have someone that's gone into these facilities who is really these undercover investigators such as Cody should be admired. They're heroes. They're going into these tough situations, documenting abuse, like in the case of hitting cows with wrenches, which led to animal cruelty charges. And the industry's response isn't, hey, let's clean up our industry. Let's make sure that these abuses aren't happening. But instead, they want to put in prison and put in jail somebody like Cody. And that's just un-American. And what we're seeing across the country is legislators that are unfortunately willing to oblige these meat industries in getting them to introduce ag gag bills. These bills are very scary. They would, in fact, put people like Cody behind bars if criminally prosecuted after they pass. And
how,
so
How do they sell it?
It's unfortunately in some of these states like Idaho and Wyoming and a few of these other states that are really heavily in ag, it's not a matter of selling it. It's a matter of just leaning on the legislators that they've been giving money to their campaigns for years. These agricultural committees, these bills are introduced and they move very quickly, and it's because it's done behind closed doors. I think a good example of that, and just to show how much backdoor dealing there is in Kentucky, just a few weeks ago, the Kentucky ag gag bill fortunately died, but the bill, the ag gag language was amended to a bill that was actually going to help animals. It would make euthanasia by gas chambers in the state of Kentucky illegal, a good bill for animals, and the meat industry and the Senate Agriculture Committee slipped on an ag gag bill, an ag gag provision, 24 hours before the hearing, didn't give any public notice, passed the bill out of committee, tried to sneak it onto the floor, and it just goes to show how much they have to hide. Because if they were transparent, what they would know is people would oppose it, and that's exactly what's happened. Unfortunately, these bills have failed in multiple states.
But it's passed in other ones, right? I mean, at some point, don't these lawmakers have to say, here's why I voted for this, here's my explanation for protecting farmers or something?
You're right, and unfortunately in the United States, there's now been 7 states, Idaho being the latest, that has passed an ag gag law. They have been attempting in about 30 states now, so the track record is running in our favor. The animal welfare groups have been able to push back, but when they do pass, you're exactly right. They pull out your token family farmer like my grandmother or my aunt to say that these animal rights activists are, you know, attacking animal agriculture, when in fact all it is we're exposing animal agriculture for what it is. The public simply doesn't know what's happening on American farms. And we believe, and most people agree, that you have a right to know where your food is coming from. You have a right to know the way the animals that you are consuming have been treated. And the work of Cody and his fellow investigators are heroic. They're going in. They're documenting these abuses. We're showing it to the public. And what the public is finding out is that Old McDonald's farm doesn't really exist anymore. It's these large industrial factory farms described like Cody did. Filthy conditions. Animals stuck in cages so small they can't even turn around or exhibit any type of natural behaviors. And the meat industry, again, instead of cleaning up their behavior, they simply lean on their legislative friends to pass these ag gag bills.
Cody, tell me about your second assignment. Where did you work and what did you find?
Well, the next place I went to after that, I went over to Pennsylvania and found work at a large sow farm. And sow farms are where pigs are bred to produce market pigs that are then raised for meat. And they're quite controversial now because a huge majority of them employ what are called gestation crates, which are essentially large metal cages where the breeding sows, are kept in these individual units where they can barely move an inch for their entire lives. And similar to the dairy, they're just kept perpetually pregnant to be as productive as possible, and their welfare is really given no consideration at all. So what I thought I'd seen that was bad at the dairy farm, I was just shocked after seeing what goes on in these gestation farms. It's like one of the worst fates you can imagine for a living creature, particularly a smart and sensitive creature like a pig. So I worked there for about 7 weeks, and just horrified by things I'd see every day from these animals being just completely neglected. I mean, they were going crazy in their cages, banging their heads against the bars all day, maniacally biting on them. You know, they had huge sores on their shoulders from where they're constantly rubbed up against their metal cages. And perhaps worse, I mean, the worst part was they're constantly producing these babies that they then see mishandled, thrown around like footballs. You know, they're castrated and have their tails cut off without anesthesia. This is all happening right in front of their mother's faces, who are extremely protective and have no way of doing anything about it because obviously they're extremely immobilized in these tiny cages. So it's just heartbreaking to see things like that.
It's dangerous work. I mean, it would be dangerous for you under any circumstances, but I would imagine if you got caught trying to catch some undercover video, you'd be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I could be. It certainly was dangerous and dangerous work in every sense of the word, not only in terms of, you know, workplace injuries, but also just the atmosphere you're exposed to there. And later on when I worked at egg farms, it's just, you had to wear a mask every day. And even still, you were exposed to high levels of ammonia and all sorts of other particulate matter. But in terms of getting caught, I guess that was a real risk. I was fortunate to be able to avoid that.
Did you ever hear your coworkers in any of those places talking about animal welfare people, or be on the lookout for animal welfare people, or saying what they would do if they caught somebody like you?
Yeah. More often than you might think. It's sort of a hot topic in the industry. You know, obviously, people like Matthew are making a huge headway in terms of, moving the cultural ball on this one. And so, the industry is really sort of obsessed. We had industry-wide meetings when I worked at this pig farm. We actually got together with all the other sow farms in the region to have a meeting, largely about what to do about, the progress being made by animal rights groups and, what to do if you suspect an investigator on your farm and things like that. So, there's a large culture of paranoia there, and it's pretty unfortunate.
Matthew, same sort of question. How dangerous was the work that he was doing? I mean, could you imagine what they would have done if they had caught Cody or some of the other people who did this kind of work?
unfortunately, I'd hate to imagine what they would do. And Cody mentioned that they had meetings to talk about the animal rights groups and what they were doing. I wish that these industries would have meetings to talk about animal welfare, about how they can improve the lives of these animals that they're sending to slaughter. But it's pretty clear. These practices, they don't want to let them go, whether it's gestation crates, these tiny crates that house mother pigs for their entire life, unable to even turn around, or the barren battery cage, where these egg-laying hens are trapped in these wire cages, 5 to 6 to a cage, can't even spread their wings, or these veal calves that are caught in veal crates, unable to even turn around, just like the gestation crate, that they don't want to move away from them. They want to continue defending them. They don't want the public to know about it. And it's because of Cody. It's because of the work of his fellow investigators that we know what's happening on these farms. And I really, I would be worried about these investigators, and it's why they should be celebrated. They're really the unsung heroes of the animal welfare movement. They should be celebrated for their work, not criminalized by putting them in jail for simply documenting the truth, because that's what we're talking about here. It goes to a core value of being an American, of knowing the truth, what is happening, what is going on. And it's really ironic, and it's really sad that Joe Miller of Rose Acre Farms, he's general counsel, that he was in a meeting in 2013, and Cody, I believe, actually did an investigation in one of their facilities. And he was at a conference, and he said, the fact is, you don't have the right to know where your food came from. That's a quote from Joe Miller, general counsel of Rose Acre Farms, after an investigation had been done there. And that's just plainly false. We have a right to know where our food is coming from. Americans want to know how their food is being produced. And Cody and his fellow investigators are doing just that. They're exposing these factory farms for what they are, industrial torture machines that house billions of animals. And again, my hat goes off to the work that the investigators do. But I also think it's important to realize that the work that these investigators do and what they have to go through is nothing compared to what these animals are going through. Cody can document it better than I can, but you have animals that are being beaten to death, being neglected, being housed in really deplorable conditions, that if you did it to your dog or your cat, it would be illegal in the very state that it's happening. Just look at gestation crates. If you were to do that to a dog or a cat, confining it, a mother pig who's pregnant, unable to turn around for their entire life, one of the most highly intelligent, highly social creatures really on the planet. If you did that in 50 states, those animal cruelty statutes that Wayne was talking about earlier would most likely apply to you. But yet, because it's a farm animal, somehow it's different, which is very sad. And it really goes to show the disconnect that we have between companion animals and farm animals in this country.
Cody, were you able to get to know any of these animals, or was the sheer number that you would oversee prevent something like that? I didn't know if you know, pigs are pretty smart. Did you get to know any of them, or is just so many of them, it's impossible?
Well, you know, it's funny. There was a situation on a pig farm that speaks exactly to that, because it's very true. When you have 7,000 pigs locked in these individual cages, you know, for as far as the eye can see in these huge barns, it's very easy to depersonalize them, and I think that helps explain a large amount of the cruelty that you see in these facilities, you know, beyond just the sort of institutionalized cruelty, but you see workers really kind of lose their cool with these animals, and I think that's made possible by the fact that they're rendered so anonymous by the system. But one of the ways that my coworkers had found to deal with this is among the 7,000 sows that were, like, you know, spread across these barns, there was one that they had sort of adopted as a pet or a mascot. Her name was Buttercup, where every other pig had a five-number tag number, you know, 70805. This one was known to the farm as Buttercup, and she occupied a sort of nondescript stall somewhere in the middle of the barn. But people on the way to their chores would stop by and say hi, Buttercup, and pet her and feed her a stick of gum and, you know, observe her for a minute. And, you know, in the break room, we'd talk about, oh, you see what Buttercup was doing? You check her out. It was the weirdest thing to me. I was always trying to make sense of it. And looking back, it seems so clear that it was sort of a way of investing a little bit of emotion, a little bit of recognition of the sentience of this one particular creature. And being kind to her sort of freed themselves up to continue looking at the other 600 or 6,999 sows as automatons, as numbers to be, you know, managed.
Soothing their conscience by being nice to one of them.
Yeah, essentially, you know, or yeah, exercising with your humanity, even when your workplace sort of forbids it.
The sheer numbers of animals that each of the individual workers was responsible for, I'm sure, creates all kinds of problems as well. Were you in on the turkey investigation? Was that somebody
no,
else?
No, I've never in North Carolina. No, I haven't worked at a turkey farm.
But I mean, I'll tell you what. The music is telling us we're going to take a break here right now. We'll come back and talk about the additional adventures you had on your undercover investigations and where the whole ag gag debate might be heading. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast. When we come back, we'll hear some of the difficulties he had after he gathers up evidence of intense cruelty. The powers that be react as if they don't want to hear about it. And then Matt, our other guest, Matt Dominguez, will tell us where the fight goes from here. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast. Welcome back. We're talking about an epidemic of horrible, unimaginable cruelty at these factory farms and animal welfare organizations working to uncover them. And the big ag that's fighting back. There's a story in Rolling Stone, Cody, where you uncover this evidence, you bring this video to the DA where this one farm is located, and he doesn't want any part of it. I'd imagine you run into that a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty common problem. I mean, particularly because these farms are quote unquote farms are so often located, you know, pretty far off the beaten path in these rural areas where, you know, they tend to be one of the bigger industries around. So local prosecutors are often pretty reticent to bring charges against someone with so much sway in the community. So we do encounter that. I mean, what happened with these guys, this is the dairy farm in New York, and, you know, we went to them right away with our footage and our evidence and a 40-count complaint that we prepared for them, and they basically told us in no uncertain terms, you know, we're not putting our necks out for an animal for out-of-state animal protection group. So, you know, we worked with them for a while and eventually gave up, and we took our findings to the media. And a national story broadcast on Nightline was enough to sort of convince them that they needed to take action. So that's when the investigation mounted, their investigation, and charges were filed. But, you know, you can imagine how often that doesn't happen and where prosecutors sort of use their discretion not to pursue these cases.
And, Matt, is that part of the strategy then? When you got a guy like Cody who's out there gathering the information, you kind of expect the local officials are not going to take on these big ag people, that you've got to go to the media?
Sadly, that is what we find. And I also think it's a lack of legal protection for these animals. We've spoken about the animal cruelty statutes that are in all 50 states that protect animals from malicious acts of cruelty, beating them, kicking them, and yet most of them don't apply to standard industry practices, no matter how cruel they are. I think it's important for folks to know that in the United States, we slaughter roughly 9 billion animals. I mean, think about that number, 9 billion. More animals will cross the slaughter plant floors each year in the United States than there are people on this planet. And yet, for those animals that are just as intelligent as your dogs and cats, want to engage in behaviors that give them joy and pleasure and avoid pain and suffering, there are no legal protections for them while they're on the farm. Not a single federal law protects them from abuse while they're on the farm. And the one law that governs slaughter exempts the number one animal, about 95% of the animals that we slaughter each year in the United States, which are turkeys and poultry. And yet the animal cruelty statutes also exempt either farm animals wholly or standard industry practices like gestation crates or veal crates or battery cages, these intensive confinement systems. So what you have is exactly what Cody said. You have, when you have animal cruelty that clearly violates the state's animal cruelty statute, you have DAs, you have sheriffs, you have these local law enforcements that don't want to press charges because they're either related to or friends with these factory farmers, or in the case of exposing standard industry practices to the public, simply they're not illegal. Legal, which is part of the work that we do at the Humane Society, is we work to change public policy. And so we work not only to defeat ag gag bills, which are really horrible for farm animals, but we also work in states to ban these practices through the legislative system. And it wouldn't be possible without the footage. We're working in states like New Jersey and Connecticut and Massachusetts to ban these intensive confinement systems. And it's because of the photos that I'm able to show them that were gathered by folks like Cody. When I talk with these legislators, I can show them the pain and suffering these animals are going through. And fortunately, most lawmakers, when they see these photos, their reaction is the same as mine. It's cruel, it shouldn't be happening, and there should be laws against it. And so that's why you see now 10 states have banned at least one or many forms of these extreme confinement.
It's what makes the ag gag laws so insidious. If you can stop the undercover investigation from being launched, if you can make sure that nobody gets that kind of footage, then there's nothing to take to the media when officials don't want to take action, right?
You have an industry that wants to operate in complete secrecy. No other sector, no other industry in the United States has that type of blank check to do whatever they want. And we're not talking about cars. We're not talking about coffee mugs. We're not talking about computers. We're talking about living, breathing creatures, intelligent, smart, loving animals that are capable of suffering. And yet they're locked away in these factory farms that people just, that are out on the beaten path, like Cody mentioned, in the middle of nowhere, that frankly people just don't know what's going on. And if it wasn't for these investigations, we wouldn't know. Not only because of the animal welfare concerns, but as Wayne highlighted with our investigation in 2008 that led to the largest meat recall in U.S. history. Had we not done that investigation, had an ag gag law been in effect in California during that investigation, it would have never happened. And you're talking about millions of pounds of tainted meat would be going to school children across the country. So food safety, animal welfare, environmental, workers' rights, there's a laundry list of reasons why you should hate ag gag laws.
Cody, I know one of the conditions that's imposed by these the blanket sort of boilerplate ag gag law is that people like yourself would have to come forward within 24 or 48 hours. Once you get video of animal cruelty, you have to come forward immediately. What would the effect of that be on an investigation like yours?
I mean, the short answer is that it would effectively neutralize them. If you got 24 hours of cool footage, you know, depending on what you got, if it was a really egregious practice, you might, you know, there might be some sort of, you know, enforcement taken by that. But you know, far more often what we document isn't just, you know, an isolated act, but a pattern of abuse. And so, you know, the reason why I stick around for a couple of weeks is to show, look, this happened on day one, this happened on day three, this happened on day four. And, you know, particularly with neglect claims, you know, I'd see downed cows who didn't have the strength to stand on their own feet, which is, you know, a sign of a really big problem. And rather than treat them, they just kind of get left there. And so, you know, I documented over a period of 2 weeks these poor animals being stranded here. If I documented them for one day, they'd be like, okay, there's a cow lying down. So you really do need to have these sustained investigations, not for a long period of time, but for at least a couple of weeks, to show what's really going on in these places, that people can't just go, oh, it's an isolated case of abuse. You know, we fired the responsible guy. You really want to show that this is a facility-wide practice. You know, it's happening here, there, it's having long effects, just like any other investigation, like any investigation law enforcement would do to an illegal practice. So I think that the purpose of these laws, you know, they didn't start off as what are called mandatory reporting bills. They started off banning, you know, taking footage, things like that, and eventually they realized, like, we can't defend this to the public. Let's rewrite these to make them sound like animal welfare bills, to make them sound like they're trying to encourage reporting of animal cruelty, when really what they're going to do is they're going to stop animal cruelty from being reported at all. Not just for undercover investigators, but if you're a low-level worker who's depending on your check, and you're not going to, you know, you see something that you think might be illegal or unsafe or cruel, you're being extremely discouraged from doing anything about it. Because as soon as you snap a picture, well, all of a sudden, you know, your legal rights are on the hook based on what you do. It's really a bill that's meant to discourage whistleblowers.
There was a quote in the Rolling Stone article about you, and it quotes you as saying, if you haven't been in a hen plant, you don't know what hell is. It says you were the sole attendant for 300,000 creatures. Tell me about that work, because I would think that I'm not sure I would last. I know you're doing noble work, but the kinds of stuff you had to do every day, how horrible it was.
Yeah, you know, it was brutal work. So this farm, yeah, they kept 300,000 egg-laying hens in each barn. They had about 20 barns, so you can do the math. We're talking about millions of egg-laying chickens. And as Matthew indicated, they're kept in these barren battery cages, which are essentially just little wire cages stacked on top of each other. And each cage is about the size of a microwave oven and has about 9 birds in it. And these are just, you know, loose wire cages where they're stuck, you know, shoulder to shoulder their whole lives. They can barely move. They're trampling on each other. They very frequently get caught in these cages, and they will die of dehydration or starvation, or they'll get trampled by their cage mates. So it's a really, really intense thing to witness. But also, I mean, just the sheer volume you're talking about, as you said, you know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of birds per barn, you know, farther than the eye can see. You know, before you can get to the end of the barn, the mist of ammonia, you can't even see to the end of it. And for each barn, there is one attendant responsible for working for these guys. So, you know, my job, about half of my 10-hour day was devoted towards walking up and down these aisles filled with thousands and thousands of birds with a flashlight trying to find dead chickens. And, you know, you find 100 or more a day. Very often by the time they are discovered, they had been decomposing. We refer to them in the industry as mummies because they're basically mummified. They're stuck to the floor of their cage. One of my coworkers called it pulling carpets because by the time we found them, they were so decayed that they'd stick to the ground. You'd have to sort of tear them out. It's an incredibly, you know, depressing thing to see. As soon as you walk into these barns, you're hit with the smell, with the sound, and the visual of just all these animals living in. I mean, it's like a scene from Dante, you know, it's a layer of hell.
My gosh. And then, of course, food is coming out of this place. The incredible stench, the urine and feces and dead birds and yum, sure. Yum. We're eating food right out of there.
That are, you know, eggs that are being laid on top of dead chickens. It has, you know, major public health effects. I believe salmonella rates are significantly higher, so many studies show, on these barren battery cage farms so than they are in, you know, natural free-range facilities. So there's a real public health component to this, too.
Wow. Matt, has anyone been prosecuted under any of these ag gag laws yet?
Fortunately, no. As Cody highlighted and pointed out, that these laws are really meant to cause a chilling effect on investigations, and they want to essentially shut down. And they know that animal welfare groups, we don't break the law. The Humane Society of the United States, it complies with all laws in the work that we're doing. And so they know that we're not going to send an investigator in if there's an ag gag law. There was an attempt in Utah where a woman who pulled out her cell phone, just not an investigator, just a regular citizen, pulled out her phone and captured animals being dragged and pushed into the food chain with tractors, and they filed charges under the Utah Ag Gag Law, which passed in 2012. But the charges were quickly dropped after really a backlash by the public on this idea that a woman from a public space, she was standing on the road, took a picture or a video, and she would be criminally prosecuted was just beyond absurd. But they are on the books in seven states, and they do cause a chilling effect, and it's scary to think that in some of the state's top agricultural areas that we are not able to do undercover investigation. And it really goes to show how much this industry has to hide and what are they doing in these states. States like Idaho and Missouri and Iowa, you have millions of animals. In the case of Iowa, you have the top agricultural state in the country, and it is illegal for you to do an undercover investigation to expose animal abuse. It really raises the question of what do they have to hide, and we know what they have to hide. Cody's documented. He's explained what we find when we go into these barns.
Well, it's crying out for an investigative unit, a TV news operation or a newspaper, a professional journalism organization, to go ahead and challenge this thing, to go undercover, get the video, put it out, and see if these guys go after them.
Yeah, it comes down to the public has a right to know what's happening on these farms, and these laws are completely at odds with our moral values. Wayne talked about in his portion of the interview about our connection with animals and the obligation that we have to care for them. And a lot of times we don't think about the farm animals. We don't think about the 9 billion animals that are raised on factory farms in the United States. And we have a duty to protect them. And it's wonderful because in the United States, and all of us, each one of your listeners has the opportunity to effectuate change for farm animals than simply making sure that every time they sit down that they choose compassion over cruelty. And they can do that with every meal. They can do that with every purchase when they go to the stores, to not pay money to these factory farmers that are torturing animals.
I seem to remember working on a story about mad cow disease, a suspicion that maybe there's a lot more of it out there in the food chain than is being reported, because no one wants to look. And there was a company, Crestone, I'm trying to remember the name of the company, that wanted to be able to say, we've checked all of our beef, not 1%, we've checked all of our animals, and there's no mad cow. And the USDA wouldn't let them because it would make other beef producers look bad. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that, but it really, these bills, these ag gag laws, and the USDA and the agricultural sector, really shows that they have a lot to hide. And not just for food safety issues, but also the animal welfare concerns. In 2008, our investigation led to the largest meat recall in U.S. history because tainted meat was going into the food supply. Cody's correct that rates of salmonella are higher in these battery cage facilities than in higher welfare facilities where your eggs are produced. People should be offended by these bills on multiple levels, for the safety of their food, for the concerns of animal welfare, for environmental issues, and also the workers. Think about in the case of Cody and his fellow workers, if you have an employee that happened to pull out his phone to document a worker's safety issue, a piece of machinery that's broken in some of these states, that act alone would be illegal.
Cody, what do they do when you got a facility that has 10 million animals or 10, millions of chickens? Where does all that animal waste go to? I would think there'd be some environmental concerns that we don't hear about.
Yeah, I mean, there's massive environmental effects from concentrating animals to such a degree. Largely what happens, especially with animals that produce wet waste like pigs and cows, they go into these huge lagoon systems. And what happens is, I mean, you know, a large factory farm can produce more waste than a small city. One of my supervisors at the dairy farm estimated that the cows produce 10 times as much manure as they do milk. And the way that's treated is it's not. It really, unlike, you know, the sort of treatment system you'd have for that much waste if it was human waste, with these animals, it's just sort of concentrated in a large lagoon. And usually it's spread by spraying it into the air on top of, you're supposed to own neighboring fields. But there's a huge problem with over-application. Rural communities near these areas are always inundated with way too much waste. Actually, there had been a huge lawsuit against this dairy farm, for example, based on the public health problems that were occurring in the neighborhood. People were turning on their spouts. Manure was coming out. Many, many people had gotten sick from both the water and the air exposure to all this manure. So it does have massive problems, especially when you consider that many of these animals, they're being adulterated by all these, antibiotics, growth hormones, other chemicals. That's making it into the water system. So, all this stuff has major downstream effects.
It seems to me that in the years of I've been covering animal issues, the most effective representatives for the animals and animal welfare organizations are those that don't get too preachy, that don't get in somebody's face and order them to stop eating meat. You got to give up eggs. You got to stop drinking milk and eating cheese. Who will provide information, but don't preach too much. Would you agree with that, Cody?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, the Humane Society, we're a pretty big tent organization where we try to rope in everyone from, hardcore vegans to dedicated omnivores. Some of the best people that I've met doing this work are the people from our agricultural councils, where we have livestock farmers who, represent a better way. And I think, they're very effective to reaching out to certain populations. I do believe that people shouldn't be purchasing, if they can avoid it, these factory farmed eggs in particular, which are so cruel. And there are other ways to do it, whether that's taking eggs out of your diet or sourcing them from higher welfare farms. So I think, people are going to go about as far as they're comfortable with going, and I think that's a great thing. I think whatever people are able to do is better than doing nothing.
Can I believe it when it says cage-free on the label of some eggs that I is it truthful? In general, or do you know?
Well, so I've never worked in a cage-free facility, but I've read a lot about this. And, cage-free is a great step up for cage-free eggs. At least these animals are not stuck in these tiny cages. They're able to move around. The general consensus is that they're very overcrowded in these barns. Nonetheless, they still never go outside. They're basically left to sort of, in these huge flocks of thousands of birds that are still sort of trampling over each other. They don't have the freedom to do what they should. But if it's the difference between buying cage-free eggs or buying caged eggs, I mean, it's a no-brainer. You spend the extra couple cents to give these animals, a better life. Of course, if people can find truly free-range eggs, the places that do sort of more resemble old McDonald's farms, they're out there. They're much fewer than they were. But I think that's another huge step up.
That does exist, huh?
I mean, yeah, you can go to the farmer's market if you live in a rural area. You can always find people that I think, raise a couple dozen hens in their backyard and sell them. They're still small farms. They're struggling. They're getting, forced off the land by these larger farms. But they're out there somewhere.
I think it'd be pretty cool to raise your own chickens. I'm not sure I can get away with it where I live here in Las Vegas, but I think Nathan, our guy in the booth there, he's going to give it a try. We'll come back with my guests, Matt Dominguez and Cody Carlson, and we'll be opening up the phone lines with your questions for these guys who've been on the front lines of the fight for animal welfare. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast.